finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show on a Thursday. Myself and Conan are here in studio, and usually we'll run through some stories of the day. And the first story on my list was the whole crisis and the whole big news coming out of Offaly. But we're better off talking to the man at the centre of the whole thing, because Stephen Wallace has joined us on the line. Stephen, I'm sure you've had better days.
Yeah, Colin, look, it's been a trying couple of hours, you know. It's been a trying couple of days, really, you know, having to deal with the fallout of the, you know, the backlash of Sunday's game with the stuff that's, I suppose, well documented now, that's gone on in the media. But, you know, I think from a personal point of view, I think the player statement last night, you know, that sums it up. That says enough for me.
Yeah, so since the game and since the loss, have you felt like a dead man walking with the county board, or have you seen the writing on the wall, or did last night's phone call come as a big surprise to you?
No, I mean, the writing on the wall. No, look, we lost a game of football, Colm. Yeah. We need to be realistic about this. The players were bitterly disappointed with our performance. But, I mean, we had no God-given right to be Wicklow. You know, it's an Offaly team in transition. We've had some good times this year, for sure. But they've won one game at the Leinster Championship in the last 10 years, you know. A resurgent Wicklow team under John Evans, hungry Wicklow team, and they beat us on the day. And the fallout from it, you know, people saying that it's the worst day in the history of Offaly GAA. I mean, the overreaction has probably cost me my job at the end of the day, you know. We lost the game, and it's cost me my job. Nobody's looked at the good performance we had in the O'Byrne Cup, the great wins we had in the National League to keep a real young team up in Division 3. The county board are well aware of the panel of players that I'm working with, and would be in, you know, have made it very vocal that they're fully aware of the limitations, if you will, the panel of players that we have at our disposal at this moment in time. And they know it was a rebuilding process, and then we lose a game and I'm gone. You know, so yeah, very, very hard to take, and very disillusioned by the whole thing, and very disillusioned by a lot of the stuff that's come out in the media, and 99% of it unfounded.
I think the thing about managing a county like Offaly, with the great history that they have, and we saw it with the hurling as well, it's almost like the Offaly public are refusing to accept the level that they're at, you know. And like, sometimes I'm guilty of that with Laois as well, and we're on the slide, and I'm refusing to accept that we're Division 3 or 4 standard. I'm saying we could be Division 2. It's natural enough for a county to be in denial about the level that they're at, so that the fallout from a loss against Wicklow in a traditional county like Offaly will be that bit higher.
Quite possibly, but I'm not here to debate the pros and cons of the Offaly supporters. There's a very small but loyal band of Offaly supporters who travel to Brewster Park, who travel to Derry with us, you know. But very, very small, you know. I would take those people's opinions on board. But there's people making comments now that, you know, they don't know anything about the actual inner sanctum of what's going on within the Offaly senior football team. And look, I'm not here to talk about the perceptions or the ambitions of the people of Offaly. You know, we're a very small panel. We were very tight. And, you know, what's going on within the panel is all we're privy to.
Okay, well, let's talk about the accusations then, because there's so many different strands to this, I don't even know where to start. Let's talk about the accusations, and in particular Brian Gavin, who spoke on Midlands Radio as a co-commentator at the weekend, and then was on Game on RT, and then he was on Off the Ball, I think it was on the Monday night. So he had free rein, and he did pretty damning job on painting a picture against you and against your management team.
Absolutely, and I'm sure he's very proud of himself. You know, but like I say, this is all unfounded, Colm. As Nigel Dunn's statement to the media in social media yesterday morning, I believe, that should put this to bed. He basically discredited what Brian Gavin said about him, because what Brian Gavin said was incorrect. And it was sensationalised, and it was blown out of all proportion. And he named players without having spoken to the players. He never spoke to Nigel. He named Sean Pender, who would die on the field in an Offaly shirt. He portrayed Sean Pender as being grossly unhappy and disruptive and etc. Sean Pender was taken off on medical grounds, and Sean Pender understands the process now. He didn't want to come off Cullum.
Yeah.
Sean Pender would stay on there if he'd only one leg hanging off, and that's the sort of a young lad he is. But for the better of the player, the medical team said that he had to come out or he would not play football again in the year 2018. He was going to basically destroy his quad muscle.
So he had a torn quad going into the... Or he'd recovering
he
from a torn...
Right. Yeah, he didn't train for 4 weeks before the game, Colin. We were told by the medical team that he would get maybe 45 minutes. The story that came out of the dressing room at halftime was that there was another 10 minutes in him, and the medical team pulled him because they were looking at we could possibly be out again in 2 weeks or again in the qualifiers in 4 weeks were we to lose the game, which we subsequently did. For the better of the player welfare, they did that. And Sean had no problem with that.
Okay.
And he had a bit of a, again, you've been taken off, I've been taken off. Nobody's happy to be taken off, Colin. We'll all be pissed off when we're taken off a football field, right?
No,
it's
no.
Human nature.
I'd read nothing into Sean Pender being annoyed coming off, because if he felt all right, but if the medical team overruled his, like a player would play on with a bloody twisted ankle that's going
absolutely
to do more damage.
Absolutely.
These things happen.
You know,
the Nigel Dunn one is more interesting though, because Nigel Dunn was your top scorer throughout the league. You see, obviously all this thing is building up, so it's the loss is number one, and then two of your best players being taken off, and Nigel Dunn being taken off and then brought back on and missing a penalty. It's all building up to people thinking this is a bit of a shambles. So maybe explain the Nigel Dunn one then.
Yeah, look, I suppose I can go down the road and say, you know, as an intra-county manager, I'm not going to have to justify my decision-making behind substitutions in every single game. I make those decisions and I justify them to the players in our post-match meetings, which would be the usual crack. And you know, Cullum, some players are complaining, oh, why was Cullum played and I wasn't, and why was I taken off? And that's normal practice within a player's squad, okay? But just to put out there the logic behind the Nigel thing, Nigel was after coughing up a couple of under 21 yard frees. His head was down, he was just in a bad place. The logic behind the decision was get Nigel out of there, sit him down for 15 or 20 minutes, let him clear his head, and get him back in. And that was the plan. What subsequently happened was Nigel was obviously disappointed, would be taken off, voiced his concerns to management in the dressing room. This whole thing now lasted 15 or 17 seconds, I was told, Cullum. The management then went and spoke to Nigel, chatted it out with him. Nigel realised, you know, call it the error of his ways, whatever you want. They chatted it out. Nigel put his boots back on and came back out with the team in the second half. And he's to be commended for that, because, Cullum, we've all thrown straps in dressing rooms. And it happens in every dressing room, in every club, in every county in the island of Ireland every single Sunday, in league games and cup games and everything like that. Nobody is happy with being taken off. But the fallout of this, you'd swear 20 Offaly fellas would punching the heads off each other inside in the dressing room.
It
couldn't be further from the truth. And who even ran with this to Brian Gavin is the bigger question here.
See, this is the question I want to know. Like, I mean, have you any involvement with Brian Gavin? Because, like, I mean, I've criticised Laois managers. There was one in particular, Mick Lillis. Now, that's water under the bridge now. But the reason, one of my motivations for doing that would be because of things I heard, but also I had personal experience with him, and I kind of had a gripe with him, and maybe a personal, personal issues with him, and that would have been my motivation for doing that. Where's Brian Gavin's motivation for doing such a hatchet job on you and your management team? Like, does he have relations on the team? Like, where is this coming from with Brian Gavin?
I really don't know, Colm. You know, I have my own personal opinion on what Brian Gavin is at and what he's about. But a man said to me once when I was just after kind of leaving college, I was young and I was naive, got out into the workplace, and he once said to me, he said, always remember, if you want to fight with a pig, you have to be willing to roll in the muck, and who wants to get all shit and dirty? And I've always lived by that. I have my own beliefs why Brian Gavin is using the Offaly senior football team as cannon fodder in his campaign or his crusade. But this isn't about Brian Gavin. This is Brian Gavin's information that he has put out there has been unfounded. As recently as Tuesday morning, he went on a local radio station and he made a statement saying that my suspension had been increased from 8 weeks to 12 weeks. This is categorically and 100% lies, but he has been given free rein to do a hatchet job on me.
Right.
Why, Cullum? I've my own ideas, but let's not make this about Brian Gavin, because it has all been about Brian Gavin up to now.
Yeah.
And so let's cut this guy off.
No, and that's fair enough.
Nigel cut him off with his statement, and I think that statement should be the end of Brian Gavin's.
Yeah. Now you'd have to say, like, Brian Gavin might be getting this. Like, this, again, this is my experience on panels, right? So you could have 90% of the panel happy. You'll have a few, usually subs, that are unhappy, and they'll say the setup is shit. And then the other lads that are all on the team will say it's great. And that's normal. No panel has a panel of players that's universally happy. So maybe Brian Gavin and people are getting some information off a few disgruntled players. Like, I mean, Johnny Maloney walked off the panel earlier in the year. You know, could that be where this is coming from?
I'm actually delighted that you brought up young Johnny Maloney. But regarding the disgruntled panel, can I just say, and you've read the player statement.
Yeah.
The player statement, the players that trained in Kilcarmack last night, and they were all there bar four of the panel. One of them was gone to an Ed Sheeran concert with my blessing, and another lad had work commitments, and two other guys weren't there, you know.
Yeah, well, Nigel Dunn was one of the lads that wasn't there. Now
he was, and look, I'm in communication with Nigel Dunn. There's no issue with Nigel Dunn. Nigel Dunn just needs a bit of time and space, and Nigel Dunn loves Offaly, and he loves Offaly football, and there is no issue with Nigel Dunn, and I would be amazed if Nigel Dunn didn't return to the panel. I'm not there now, so I can't say, but I would have been fairly sure that Nigel Dunn would be back training with the Offaly Senior Footballers under my management within a week, because there isn't a problem with Nigel Dunn. The players would welcome Nigel Dunn back, you know, but he wasn't there last night, so you're correct. But the players that were there, you've seen the statement, Colin. They categorically denied having sent any information to any media or journalists. So again, I'm asking the question, who's given this information to Brian Gavin? And they were very strong at the point in their statement last night.
Yeah, which is definitely an interesting one. So, like, I mean, I contacted Tommy Byrne, the Offaly chairman, today, because I found it very surprising that a county board would sack a manager that had full backing of the players. You know, even after a bad defeat, it's your first year. Like you said, you beat Westmeath to stay up in Division 3. Offaly are by no means a superpower. You lost to Wicklow. Grand, that's embarrassing. But for a manager to get sacked at that stage, I would have thought he needed to lose the dressing room, and that was the accusation against you. And as it turns out from this player statement, it doesn't look like you've lost the dressing room. Like, I would think maybe you've lost three or four players, if I'm being honest, but you haven't lost the majority of them.
Yeah, but Colin, I'm intrigued there by the belief that it is embarrassing for Offaly to lose to Wicklow. I think that has been totally disrespectful to the Wicklow football fraternity. It's been disrespectful to the work that John Evans is doing down there. As St. Vincent's will attest to, they went down there and they got toppled by Ratnew, the county champions. Yeah. There is strong football tradition in Wicklow. So how Offaly can think it's embarrassing to lose to Wicklow is so disrespectful to the Wicklow football community, and I cannot get my head around that train of thought.
I think it's based on their league, you know, their league form, and they only won one game in the league, and, you know, they just had it. They looked like they were going really badly. You know, that's probably what people are basing that on. It's not really disrespectful to Wicklow.
It's John Evans. It's John Evans, a wily old fox, championship football. You know, look, same thing. Your lads Leash nearly a game of Crawford below on Wexford. Wexford didn't win a game all year.
Yeah.
They were supposed to go down, show up and come home, and they should have been beaten below there. You know, so why are Offaly being so dismissive of Wicklow? I think it's very, very unfair and disrespectful.
Yeah, okay, that's a fair point. So I'll get back to Tommy Byrne anyway. So I rang him this morning, and he told me that, because I obviously heard the player's statement was handed to him, and I was interested that, obviously, I was thinking that should really have been taken on board in the review meeting. He wouldn't tell me whether he read out the statement in the meeting or whether the statement even saw airtime in the meeting. He said he's not going to answer that question. What he did say is that appointment and sacking of managers is nothing to do with the players. It's a county board decision. And he said the county board based his decision on you being suspended, and how can you fulfil your role as a senior manager when you can't be a train and you can't be on the line and you can't fulfil your role properly. So that was his reasoning that he gave me.
Okay, there's two issues in that, Colm. Firstly is, of course it's about the players, and it should be all about the players and the commitment and they put their lives into this. So to dismiss the players like that is just typical of the Offaly County Board, is disrespectful to that bunch of young fellas.
I agree.
They gave a statement saying that they were fully committed to me and my backroom team and wanted to move on and get on with the qualifiers. The second part of that question, Colm, is why is my suspension now an issue? Tommy Byrne knew since the beginning of May that I was suspended. He knew that.
Yeah.
So why sack me last night and use my suspension as an excuse or the reason? He knew the beginning of May that I was under suspension, and we still prepared the team diligently. Obviously, I couldn't be involved in it, but that's why I've got a backroom team. That's why I've got Billy Sheehan, I've got Brendan Keeley, I've got Brian Egan, I've got Owen Shea, I've got Paul Mullen. Why is it now an issue, Colm?
So
he
if he,
knew
so
in
if
early
say,
May,
say
and
it.
I have the text, I yeah. the text message when I came out of my hearing, Colm, and the hearings committee upheld the findings of the CCC. The first person that I informed was Tommy Byrne,
right?
And I had the text message in my phone. He then went on national media this morning, and he said that the first he heard of my appeal being unsuccessful was Sunday in O'Connor Park before we left for Port Leash. Okay. That is another untruth. Tommy Byrne, when I came out of the Munster Council appeal on Friday night and I was given their decision, the first person I informed, and have always done so in this process, was Tommy Byrne on Friday night. And I have that text message in my phone.
Right.
He has been fully aware, and I have been totally upfront and open with the Offaly County Board Chairman in the whole process. And for him to say he didn't know my appeal was unsuccessful until Sunday is a blatant lie.
Okay. Right. So,
and like, I will show, if anyone wants to see the text messages and his reply to me, I'm happy to show them.
Okay, well, right, you might send that on to me there after the interview. Just quickly, if he had rang you at the start of May when he was made aware of your suspension and said, Stephen, look, this isn't going to work out, we need you at training, mm-hmm. would you have understood the decision then?
100%, Colm, because what I did is it can't be condoned. I had a rush of blood to the head. I would just like to say I never received a red card in my whole playing career, or now since I've gone into management. I've never been put off or disciplined in my life, Colm. Now, I played the game hard and fair, and I wouldn't shirk any responsibility that way.
Yeah.
But I have never been put off the field to play, ever. But what I did is I had a rush of blood to the head. There was a championship club game that I was asked by my club, would I offer my assistance on the day? Of course I would. They're my club. I had friends and family obviously playing, my brothers were playing, and there was a row. I got involved in a row. I shouldn't have got involved in the row, Colm. I'm not saying I was right. I'm not, what I did cannot be condoned, but I got my suspension, okay?
Yeah.
I got suspended for the actions that I undertook, okay? But I paid the price for my crime, okay? Took
yeah.
my suspension. But now I'm paying the price for the crime a second time. Like, how many times do you have to suffer for your crime, and if you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not going to judge you for the suspension because
if the Offaly County Board at the time had said this isn't going to work, Stephen, because you now are not in a position to prepare the county board team, and terminated my contract at the time, I could see the logical rationalisation to that.
Yeah,
I cannot see any logic or rationalisation to the decision now. But it is, because we lost the football game against Wicklow. Let's call a spade.
Yeah, it is. I think it is.
And there's lies and untruths going out there, and I'm hoping I'm setting the record straight, because I'm going to be upfront and honest, and I'm going to call it as it is. And like I say, that club game, look, Arthur and John Mitchell's are neighbouring clubs. The John Mitchell's manager is my next door neighbour. We drank pints of Guinness that night and we laughed about it. I got players from the Mitchell's club that rang me that night saying, look, don't worry about the row. We all shook hands and we had a hug and a laugh after the game. That's
yeah.
GA. You move on. People do stupid things.
I understand that.
I'm being thrown under every single bus that passes on the motorway. I'm being thrown under it for the last 3 days because of this. But
just,
this is all news. This happened weeks ago.
No, it did happen weeks ago. And again, I don't want to get into that incident because, like, I mean, I've got in scrapes on a football field, and you can do things that I'm sure you're not proud of it. I would be interested in why you appealed it when, like, the evidence was there. We saw the video evidence of it.
Yeah.
Why are you appealing it and letting it drag on rather than take your suspension?
Because I owe a lot to the Offaly football players to do everything in my power to free myself of the allegation and the suspension so that I can be with them and prepare them. And there was a technical issue
right.
Within the process, and I, like most other players or any manager, or you do it yourself, if there is a way to get out of it, it's your human right to try to get out of it.
Yeah, I understand
and
that.
I needed to do everything. I needed to exhaust every single avenue that I possibly could so that I could be available to this squad of young guys. And that's why I did it. And I failed. And I'm not denying what happened, or I'm not condoning what happened. I'm sorry and remorseful for what happened. But I have, as a human being, a right to try to get myself out of it.
Yeah. Okay. So just
for the betterment of the office.
No, I understand that. Like, I mean, you see Dear McConnelly and loads of players trying to get off on like red cards to get back for an All Ireland final. That's the culture.
Yeah,
that's a culture within the GAA.
I'm not the first guy.
No, there's loads more examples. Before I'm lynched, there'll be loads more examples in Dear McConnelly. That's the first one that just popped into my head because it was an All Ireland final. But here, let me just paint this picture, and I'm trying to see it from the Offaly County Board's point of view, is that right? So you were suspended, so it's obviously difficult playing or being at training, being whatever, and they're working with you on that and they're saying that's okay. Then the loss to Wicklow, so maybe in their heads then they're saying, right, well, maybe him not being at training is affecting it. And then obviously, and maybe it was an error in judgment on your part, the pictures of you up in the stand with the hoodie up and the hat, you look like a gangster. You look like a gangster up there, I'm sure.
Right.
Maybe if you were to do that again, you probably wouldn't have done it. But the point I'm trying to make is all these different things are probably building up. Then Brian Gavin obviously really stuck the boot in on you. So you've got a lot of different factors building up, and it obviously has culminated in you getting that phone call last night.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you to repeat the first point now in a second. But regarding what I was wearing that day, I had about six layers of clothes on me in Portlaoise in O'More Park on Sunday, Cullum, because I was dying with a flu all week. I was absolutely choked. I had layer after layer after layer. As you know, a concrete stand in O'More Park doesn't get a whole lot of sun. The sun goes to the terrace. And I was coughing and spluttering, and the last piece of attire I put on was a woolly hat and a hoodie, because I was choked with a flu. Listen, I'm just telling people why I was dressed like that. But I mean, is there a dress code now for a manager? I was sick, so I wrapped up warm, and that's a problem now?
Yeah.
Come on, Cullum, this is getting ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just trying to give a side of it that might be, you know, it's somebody else's argument, that the image of Offaly football with you up in the stand kind of looking like a bit, like someone out of Love Hate, maybe.
That's what I'm saying. You might in your role as being a big influencer of the GAA, maybe propose that maybe there should be a managerial dress code. that might be the way to solve that. But regarding why the Offaly got rid of me because they reckon, I couldn't prepare the team properly. I agreed a 3-year plan with the review committee in Offaly, of which the chairman Tommy Bourne sat in. They are fully aware of the rebuilding process that I have undertaken in Offaly, and that was the remit, and that's why I was, you know, excited about the project. Okay, I have an 8-week suspension.
When's that up?
About 4.5 weeks now, I think, at this stage. The most I was going to miss in a 3-year project now, let's not shy away from this, I was going to miss 2 games where I was going to have to sit in the stand.
Yeah.
Now, are you telling me that makes logical sense when they know I'm trying to rebuild a new team over 3 years, and I could be sick for 2 games as easily as I could be suspended? Were they going to sack me then as well?
Yeah. No, look,
There's no logic to this, Colin. There's no logic to it, and the untruths that came out on the radio again this morning it's just leaving a real nasty taste in my mouth.
That was the exact thing. Just to finish up, is that, like, I mean, have you been soured from inter-county management? Like, the Offaly County Board doesn't have a good reputation. I think everybody accepts that throughout the country. But at the same time, like, I mean, would you be thinking twice? Have you learned lessons from this whole thing?
And Colum, let me tell you, they're right, and this is just further proving it. But can I just say, and I think it's important, and I really feel bad for them. It's the players that are suffering because of this ineptitude, and they're a great bunch of lads. They're totally committed. They give their lives to the whole thing. There are roadblocks put up in front of them week in, week out. You know, we had a relatively good campaign this year. Like I said, beat Westmeath for the first time in 12 years. Went down to Wexford in a must-win relegation game. First Offaly team to go to Wexford and win in 23 years. overcame a huge deficit with Armagh, where they were beaten by 30 points last year. We lost by 5. Armagh won Division 3 and will probably be a Super 8 team. Massive gap bridged by these players, and they're improving every day. And the project was going in the right direction. So I think there's big credit due to the players, because the roadblocks that are being put up in front of them week in, week out, like, culminated 2 weeks ago when these players were talking about going on strike, and I had to talk them out of it because they were just fed up with the way they were being treated by the Offaly County Board. And I have a statement that was handed to me by the captain and player rep in the Esker Hills Golf Club that is pretty bloody damning if it got into anyone's hands.
Right, and what were their issues?
The one thing they said in the meeting was categorically the one part of the process, and there was 36 or 40 people in the meeting, so this isn't hearsay, this is a fact. The one part of the process that they were 110% happy with was the management and the backroom team and what was going on the pitch.
Right.
And then it went nuclear, and it culminated on them talking about going on strike. There was players with tears in their eyes because they hadn't got their boot vouchers, they couldn't afford a new pair of boots. There was other senior players crying with emotion because they were fearing their career was being ruined because we didn't have a competent medical team. We've had no S&C coach since last February, Cullum. Now, you give me another inter-county team that doesn't have an S&C coach over an issue with his fee being paid. You know, now this will come across as, oh, Stephen Wallace is using these as excuses. These is not Stephen Wallace's excuses. This is the statement that I was handed by the captain of the Offaly football team and the player rep in the Esker Hills Golf Club. And I said, lads, be very careful where you're going with this. I talked them back down. I refused to give the statement in. I said, let's sleep on this now, lads, because, you know, emotions are high. We'll sleep on it. But if you still want me to give it to the Offaly County Board in the morning, I gladly will. But let me see if I can rectify some of these problems. Which I did. And the players were in a better place within 24 to 48 hours. And subsequently went back to work.
And did you rectify it with Tommy? Did you rectify it with Tommy Byrne?
Just finishing that column. But we then lose a game of football to Wicklow, and it's all my fault.
Yeah.
Come on, Cullum.
Yeah. And was it Tommy Byrne you tried to rectify that with? Like, had you a good relationship?
Relationship
with him?
Tommy Byrne came in, and he met with the players. There was a meeting called, they call it an emergency meeting, whatever you want, in the Tullamore Court Hotel on that Sunday. The day, I'm not really sure. but they were going. I have the statement. I have it here. They were walking, Cullum, and I talked them back off the brink. And now, 2 weeks later, it's all my fault. And 2 weeks later, I've lost the dressing room. This is a dressing room that was influenced by me, and we were all in this together. That's why they didn't go. That's why they didn't go on strike. And now it's my fault.
Right. That's interesting.
People need to see the wood from the trees here, and need to see the real picture. I've been thrown under a bus over a stupid thing that I did that I'm deeply remorseful for, and that makes me a big bad person. I just wish people would. I wish people would look at this realistically.
Stephen, thanks very much for taking the call.
Not at all, Cullum. It's my pleasure. Anytime.
I said, are you going to get up or are you going to stay in bed? I said, we have a game there about 3:30. If you wouldn't mind joining us. Didn't even start, like, didn't even go for the bag. Took his lie in, took his extra 5 minutes. It was like the snooze button. Hit the snooze button for another 5 minutes. Rolled out of bed. 1-7 that day.
Right, obviously the big one this weekend, and it's not on television, and we've complained about that, Conan, enough that we're not going to get to see this, but me and you were going to it anyway, so we can't complain too much. It's Monaghan and Tyrone, and it's in Oma. And to help us look ahead to this, Paul Finlay's on the line. Paul, how's it going?
Good, Colm. Thanks for having me on.
No bother at all. Come here, I want to read a stat to you that I read during the week, and it's just it's kind of incredible, and it's from Paul Fitzpatrick. He's an editor of the Anglo-Celt. Is it the Celt or the Celt? I think it's the Celt. Anyways, that's...
It's whatever you have in yourself,
I think. Anyways, a Cavan newspaper. You'd know nothing about this, Paul, anyways. You would never have read this in your life. Basically, he said 12 of the 20 Monaghan players who beat Cavan by a point in 2013... played in the 2018 National Football League. The other eight, so 12 of the 20 lads in 2013 played the league. The other eight, of the other eight, four retired. So there's only four drop-offs from 2013, which is, 5 years ago. And then from Cavan, only five of the 20 Cavan men who played that day are still on the panel. Of the other 15, only three are aged over 30. So, like, I mean, it just shows, Paul, how, like, the culture in Monaghan football and how they're able to retain players. And it seems to me, looking from the outside, we know you have limited resources. It's like you're maximising your potential in Monaghan all the time.
Yeah, you know, that's a brilliant stat, and it's hard to believe that that's the case. But I'll take your word for it. But definitely, that's what Monaghan have going for them this last number of years, is that, you know, we're getting the absolute most out of everything that we have, out of every player that we have, out of, you know, all the resources. You know, we have good sponsors. The county board are good. We have an excellent manager in Malachy O'Rourke, and all the players, I suppose, over the last 10 years, you know, and even in my time, that would have included a lot of my time. There was just a good buzz around the county. Banty would have brought that to a new level from where it was. And, you know, it's just continued on, and, you know, all the players that have come on since are seeing something good in Monaghan football and wanting to be part of it. And, you know, it's benefiting the county. Like, you know, we've been, you know, punching above our weight now for a few years, and it just goes to show that when you have everybody wanting to be part of it and wanting to row in the right direction, you know, it's amazing the results you can get.
Yeah, I can think of three players that jump out of me straight away in Laois that should be on the Laois panel, and they're not. And Conan, we lose count of the amount of Derry fellas. We've talked about that, like, enough. But, like, I mean, is it the case that there's fellas in Monaghan that are not committing? It doesn't look to me like that's the case, because it seems to me the atmosphere is that everybody wants to be part of it.
Yeah, Monaghan is a small county, and I suppose that benefits us in some ways, where, you know, everybody knows each other. Like, and, you know, I suppose, you know, when you get something going, like Monaghan, you know, got a couple of league titles. We eventually got over the line in an Ulster title. So that's just, you know, putting a good buzz around the whole county setup, and, you know, young fellas are watching that, and, you know, there was a good minor team that came as well. They won an Ulster title, and, you know, those guys are all coming with a good attitude, wanting to play a football at inter-county level. So I would say that Monaghan are getting the absolute best out of what's available to them in the county at the moment. You know, bar one or two possibly that you could say that could be part of the panel, I think, you know, when you look around, I'm still playing league football or club football, you know, you just know that, you know, everybody that should be playing in the county team is nearly in there.
Jeez,
and, you know,
you're
you
still
have to be onto a good thing when you have that.
You're still playing league football. I thought this was a come and get me plea to Malachy there when you were saying you're still playing.
No, thank you. You've been there, done that. I'm not going back.
Come here, talk to me about Monaghan and how they've evolved from last year then, because the whole talk last year was that Monaghan went up, got beaten well by Dublin, and Conor McManus, their captain and their best player, best forward anyways, has been on record saying that they need to evolve, they need maybe to leave a couple more players up. They need one or two and a half forward line. I saw some quotes from him recently saying, I don't think the defensive thing is going to disappear altogether. I'm not naive enough to pretend that things are just going to move away from all these defensive styles, but I imagine there will be some sort of shift towards a more attacking mindset and trying to keep more men up the field. Have you seen evidence of this, Paul?
I haven't seen a wholesale change to the way Monaghan are setting up. No, it's something that we would be aware of. You know that, you know, as the game develops, that you know you're losing a bit of shape, and you know when you don't have as many men committed up the pitch, you know guys are running out of steam, and it's hard to just to keep that momentum going. You know, the Monaghan generally start, you know, and you know everybody's loads of energy, they can get up and down the field, and you know you'll see that wane as the game goes on. I haven't seen a monumental shift in that, but I suppose another thing that would you know would happen with Monaghan and having small enough resources and a small enough squad is that last year, like, you know, they would have relied on a certain amount of players, maybe 17, 18 players, to get them through the National League, and being in Division 1, you know, that's taken an awful lot of energy out of the team. So I was looking towards this year to see, was there, you know, it's definitely evident that Malachy has got a lot more game time into the panel, and there's a lot of guys got game time that wouldn't have done in previous years. So that's something that I have seen changed, and I think it's going to, you know, work in their favour, and you know, hopefully, you know, we'll be able to see a good game from them on Sunday. But you know, going past Sunday, you know, whether it be through the front door into the Ulster Championship or continuing in Ulster Championship or through the back door, that panel is going to stand to them, because you just can't continue, you know, at a very high standard from February, March, right through to the end of the summer. So you know, that's something that I hope will change. Is there a big shift in the way Monaghan's setting up and actually playing? I don't think so.
That's the interesting thing, Conan, because, like, I mean, all the same talk was coming out of Tyrone, because they took even a worse beating against Dublin, and even maybe a more surprising one, that there was going to be a big shift, and Sean Kavanagh was online, and we're going to get to Sean Kavanagh in a little while, because he's very critical of Mickey Hart this week. But all this talk was that Tyrone were going to evolve and change, and Tyrone haven't evolved and changed outside of, instead of leaving just Mark Bradley up on his own, they're leaving Mark Bradley and Lee Brennan up on their own. So that's as much evolution as we can hope for from Mickey Hart.
Well, but with Tyrone, the funny thing is that they've, like, nobody scored more than them than Dublin in the National League, so they're doing something right to get more scores. I think with Monaghan, it's, I don't want to compare Donegal, but like, you saw when Donegal sort of pushed on 2012, they had more scores and more threat. Like, Monaghan are getting far more scores across the board now from so many players. It's not just like Madison McCarron. They're like, they're rarely top scorers throughout the National League, so maybe that's the evolution. It's just, as Paul says, they haven't changed that much, but there's more players now, more confident, and maybe just something as simple as being fitter.
Yeah, maybe it is. And like, I mean, when you look at the team anyways, you've McCarthy, you've McManus, and you have McCarron. None of them want to track back, Paul.
No, like myself, when I was at it, we weren't too fond of it. But no, everybody's having to put in a shift, you know, in the game today. You know, if you're one of those guys on the full forward line, you are expected to get back and all the defenders are wanting to go from deep, and particularly in Tyrone's case, you know, you look at they don't like to kick the ball into the full forward line. They like to attack from deep and get the runners coming from, you know, just, you know, counter attacking, and that's where a lot of their scores come from. So I do feel that it's going to be interesting this Sunday in you know, the tactical battle, obviously. But I see both teams, you know, setting up sort of similar, and it's been just a typical arm wrestle for 40, 50, 55 minutes. And then who's going to be brave enough, you know, to you know, put those players up on the pitch, you know, and maybe be able to introduce a couple of players into the game that can actually go and win it for them. You know, could be a couple of big swings, a goal in the game could make a big change, you know, at any stage in this game. So it's just, you know, teams have the resources to win it, but, you know, it's going to be who's best in the day.
What's the main thing Malachy would focus on with Tyrone? Because we know, like you said, they're not really going to kick it in. So you have to track the runners. They like to hit you on the counter-attack. But because that middle third is so messed up and there's no one's necessarily man-marking each other, who's responsible for their players when they break? Is it the nearest fella to McCann is just honest enough that he follows him, or is there accountability of who has to pick up who when they break?
Yeah, well, being out of the scene a couple of years now, you know, I'm not just totally up to date, but I'm sure, you know, that there'll be a plan in place to try and stop Tyrone's attack from, you know, at source nearly, if they can, you know, definitely around the middle third.
Right.
You know, Niall Morgan as well, capable of kicking scores from outside the scoring zone and such, so they'll be wary of that also. So, but, you know, definitely trying to stop the attacks at source, trying to slow down the play as much as they possibly can. And, you know, Monaghan are decent defensively, you know, they're a fairly good, you know, back six, you know, and they'll always have a bit of help back there as well. So, you know, I don't see Tyrone, you know, switching their tactics to kicking the ball in, you know, so it will be all about that middle third and how they can stop them right there.
Yeah, I'm always interested in how these things come about, or how, remember Tiernan McCann, Conan, was telling us last year, I was thinking it's really scientific about who breaks, and Tiernan was saying, I know, if you have energy, you break. If you're tired, somebody else will break. You know what I mean? But I was thinking this is some big, huge master plan, and often maybe tactics can be, you know, read into a little bit more than that's actually there.
I think it probably is a case of, if you've got energy as well, you track back and you follow.
Yeah, maybe
that's why Tyrone has had such success, because there isn't that sort of systematic way of stopping them yet. But I think it does have to be zonal with Tyrone. Like, when you're, if you're Monaghan, you're setting up, when you get back in the position, then you just have to have those positions, and then just if a man's in that area, then you can attack him or whatever. But yeah, they are just going to have 15 honest players, and if there's one player that's not honest, then they'll get exposed.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. What's the rivalry like between Monaghan and Tyrone, Paul? Is it like, is it heated? It doesn't seem. I remember Tyrone and Donegal always was the really difficult one. Maybe Tyrone and Monaghan a little bit as well. Monaghan and Donegal didn't have the same level of hatred in that one. I'm not sure if I'm making sense here.
Yeah, no, there's not a huge level of hatred, I wouldn't say. You know, back in most of my time, Tyrone would have had definitely had the upper hand on Monaghan. You know, they would have an outstanding team. You know, when you look back to, you know, the 05, you know, when they're all Ireland, like, we bumped into that, you know, awesome team and had trouble beating them. This is a relatively new bunch of players. There still is a few guys like Vinnie Corey, Desi Moan, maybe one or two others that would have experienced those Ulster final defeats, but relatively, this is all new. You know, we'll be looking at nothing extra special. They haven't been doing anything, you know, at all Ireland level. So, you know, it's just, you know, I think there's a level of respect between both teams, but, you know, definitely nothing to fear from either side. And you know, I think they'll both be looking at it as a game that can win and should win. So it's set up for an intriguing battle, and it'll be interesting just to see who does come out of it.
Yeah, just before we let you go, Rory Beggan has kind of brought his game to a new level with these booming outside of the foot kind of kick, or not, they're not kick outs, it's given back to him. He kick it out, he'll take it back, and then he might ping one somewhere. That's added a new dimension to them. I know he's kind of flirted with it a little bit, but it's been more obvious this year.
Yeah, I think, you know, the level that he brought his game to has made a massive difference to Monaghan and what they can bring to the table. Just in the one game in particular was Dublin, you know, and I suppose you have the wide open space of Croke Park, which helps in terms of kickouts and, you know, with a goalkeeper in possession. But he was simply outstanding, you know, just kicking the ball to guys on out in the wing, you know, 60, 70 metres down the pitch, and, you know, the direct attacks coming from it. I suppose he won't have that, you know, that sort of space in Omagh this weekend, but definitely, you know, at kick-out time, you know, Monaghan have definitely brought their game on in the last couple of seasons. And then also with Rory being able to kick from outside the scoring zone, like, you know, Niall Morgan, maybe he's even a couple of steps ahead of Niall at this stage. Where and that could be the difference, you know, if Rory can have a good day and he kicks 3 or 4 points from 50, 60 metres, that could be the difference on the day.
Yeah, definitely. Paul, come here, we'll talk to you again. Thanks for taking the call.
No worries, boy. Thank you.
Yeah, great stuff from Paul there. His phone line started breaking up a little bit there. So me and you will pick up on the Tyrone side of it, Conan, because Mickey Hart has been in the quota this week, and he says, why would we abandon all that happened before and think that that's binned, and this is only some kind of reactionary response to what happened against Dublin? This is what he was saying in reaction, obviously, to what happened last year. We are building on what we did last year, and we're keeping very much of what we did last year in our armoury. So it's not about because Dublin beat us, we throw the baby water out of the bat, forget all we'd done, and think this isn't working. Hard to disagree with Mickey Hart, really. Yeah. There, like, I mean, why would you rip up a team that dominated Ulster and a style that dominated Ulster to start again something completely new?
And that's like, it's a point I made before. Like, you know, if you were going to sort of tear up your system because Dublin beat you, then every single county in Ireland would have to tear up their system because Dublin beat them. And yes, they got well beaten, but for Mickey Hart, they would have just thought that was a really bad day at the office. The early goal definitely didn't help, and they did hammer everybody up until then. They were like putting a massive scores. Like, they're very defensive. You said this last week, they're very defensive, but they can still run up the scores. And now they've got Lee Brennan now, who's just another little dimension. I know they're not really playing everything around him, but he's just that scoring forward. He got 230, I think, in the league over 7 games. So
yeah, he's lethal from freeze. They're nearly freeze or a gimme with him, whereas a lot of time Tyrone's freeze weren't gimmies, unfortunately. Yeah. And that's a huge deflating kind of...
Well, that's it. So just even just having that person who's confident that he knows where the posts are. Like, so I wouldn't have changed much if I was Mickey Hart, because it was so obvious that they had pushed into the top 3 or 4 in the country, and then they just needed to add these other dimensions on. Now they don't need to start again from scratch. They've won 2 Ulsters, which is very, very good going.
Yeah,
especially coming from where they were coming from. They hadn't won anything since 2010. So for Mickey Hart, I'd say he's right, they're going in the right direction, now they just need a bit more.
Yeah, so Sean Kavanagh, I said I was going to get on to Sean Kavanagh. He's very critical of Mickey Hart recently. Like, I mean,
he's like Paul Scholes, isn't he?
Yeah, he's absolutely pulling no punches. So he's talking about why Tyrone don't have a marquee forward, and he's saying they did have marquee forwards. There's plenty of marquee forwards in the county. So he says that's probably one of why he's talking about the Tyrone system, and he says that it's probably one of the reasons why some of our forwards that came through the system this 4, 5, 6 years haven't really kicked on. Ronan O'Neill, Darren McCurry, Kyle Coney, who came through way back in 2009, 2010, Niall McKenna. There's been a flood of young guys who probably have suffered because we haven't played with six attackers. And maybe he has a point with that, because they're all similar profile players. They're skillful, kind of small players, and if Tyrone are going with one, we know that the rest need to be more athletic and more like, the rest of them need to be half forwards, basically, you know, yeah, working half forwards. So maybe he has a point, but like, I mean, he definitely goes very strong, and he says you do have those what ifs, that if we did go with three forwards instead of one, or gone with four, because there's serious quality in that Tyrone team. They're all there, and you should see some of the stuff they do at training, but unfortunately they don't have the confidence to do, or they don't have the, maybe they're not stuck with the same, maybe they're maybe not stuck with the same as when the game was 15 versus 15. So like, he's pulling no punches there, as in almost saying that Mickey Hart is holding these forwards back.
Yeah, like, I mean, individually at least, Ronan O'Neill and Darren McCurry have gotten plenty of chances.
They have, but in a system of one, you know, like he says, he's saying as well, we haven't really played any structure in the forward unit.
He's saying if there were six forwards, Ronan O'Neill would be better and Darren McCurry would
yes,
be better.
Yes, because they can make their diagonal runs or come on. Like, okay, traditionally, my game, okay, traditionally, say your game as a wing forward or as a centre forward might be to break to midfield, maybe get on a ball, give it in, and then you're gone for the return off a full forward and you're in on goals, you know, or like a wing forward timing his run to take a pop pass off full forward. That traditional forward unit, or like, say a corner forward, I never played there very much, but imagine they have their own traditional style of breaking across the line and having space. That's all gone for these lads. So everything they might have learned coming up through the ranks is ripped up and have to learn something new. And listen, instead of, it's hard enough to get on a county team with six forwards, but when there's only one position for your specialised kind of finisher role, I can see where Sean's coming from as well.
Yeah, like, I think though, I guess Darren McCurry's been around for a long time now, and I think I have seen enough of him to say that Tyrone were probably better off playing to other strengths and focusing on getting the most out of Niall Sludden and Peter Hart and Tiernan McCann and all these boys. Like, you know, there is a thing of, instead of trying to conceal your weaknesses, just focus on your strengths. And
but
I think their run empire was theirs.
Are they strengths because we've seen that? You know what I mean? There could be strengths that we have not seen because of the way he picks the team. That's, I think that's what Sean's getting at. I understand your point, but that's all the evidence we have.
Yeah,
you know,
it's hard.
So it's hypothetical, really, you know.
It is. Like, if it was somebody like Conor McManus and they were telling me that, you know, he's suffering because maybe it's hard, these boys can't prove that they're like Conor McManus.
Yeah, I don't know where they're at. No, I do disagree. I disagree with Sean on the run O'Neill, who I like as a real tidy player. Maybe in a different system he would be a good player, but we're not. Yeah. If we're talking about marquee forwards like Conor McManus and these lads, Conor McManus, Sean in a Monaghan team as a one forward.
Mm.
So these lads aren't marquee, like, they're not necessarily marquee forwards. They're tasty forwards. All of them are tasty. But they ain't no Conor McManus, if that's, or a Colin McFadden, or, you know, these lads that have done it single-handedly almost in these teams.
And then Mickey Hart's probably thinking, if I play six forwards and some of them aren't going to track, are we just going to get beaten anyway?
Yeah.
So the plus-minus makes sense in his book.
Yeah, so it's a different one. We're both going to this anyway, so it's in Oma. Yeah. It's in Oma. And Sean Cavanagh, he did an extensive interview. It was in The Examiner, and Jesus, Sean Cavanagh is getting very honest. Like, he was talking about Oma, not the Toronto players preferring to play in
Clonus. Very impersonal, he said it was.
Yeah, that Oma's very impersonal. And, like, I mean, it's not often. Usually, even if you're not fully confident in your home ground, you'll say you are. That's the whole psychology of it. Oh, we're delighted, we can't wait to welcome Monaghan to our ground. Kavanagh is saying we actually prefer not to be playing our own ground,
which is interesting. Like, you're probably the same as me. Every time I think of Oma, I think, oh Jesus, don't want to go there.
Me too. I thought this was a fortress until Kavanagh said
he's taken away the stigma of it completely.
So if I'm saying this, imagine what the Monaghan players are thinking by going, Jesus, I never knew that with Tyrone, that we could get inside their heads on something like this, you know. Listen, I applaud honesty, but maybe not about your own county like that.
I always wonder, would Colin now just be picking up the phone and be like, would you ever shut the fuck up? Like, I'm still playing in this team.
Yeah, definitely could have been a call made from Colin to Sean on that one.
Listen, we'll come back here with some predictions and Tom McGlinchey. Come here, I want you to talk us through the goal you scored in the county final after 15 seconds. I want you to tell me when you had goal on your mind.
Yeah, you've probably had a few 15 seconds experiences yourself. Break me off, show me what you got, because I don't want
no one-minute man. Yeah, so predictions, Conan. This has been a long show already, so we're not going to stay too long on predictions. We've done nothing on Fermanagh Armagh. We'll definitely do something or interview one of the lads from that game on Monday, hopefully. But, like, I mean, you're looking at this game, you're looking at the league final, and you're looking at it being the cagey affair that it's probably going to be on Sunday. You're looking at Armagh pulling away and getting the goal killed. Mernan cleaning up, Armagh not able for him. But, and there's a big but, that was in Croke Park. This is in Brewster Park, and this is a whole other ball game.
Yeah, it is, and like maybe, like Armagh definitely enjoyed the space that day, and Mernan definitely made hay with the space.
It wasn't the league game 8-all or something.
Yeah, like now there's also the other side of it. Like Armagh have been lumping balling very early, as soon as they can this year. So Brewster Park a bit tighter, is that going to suit them a bit more? Just put it on top of Rafferty and Mernan and see what they do with it.
Yeah, it's tighter with a double sweeper then as well. Like, I mean, they have less space to cover, so you'd imagine the you'd imagine it's much more difficult to break down a defensive team in the tight pitch. I understand you mean maybe bombing it in. Generally when you bomb it in, and you see it in hurling, they're bombing it in, there's only one sweeper, and 9 times out of 10 the sweeper's just taking the break because the man behind Mernan, it's just going, you know what I mean, it's going to spoil it, and then you're just catching up, you know, the crumbs or whatever.
I saw somebody complaining about sweepers at an underage level the other day, and I thought, you know, he's like, wait, kids don't want to do this, and I was like, playing sweeper is the best position in the world. It's the easiest thing in the world to do. You pick up those scraps and you look brilliant. You can't get roasted.
Yeah, well, but that's it, that's the same thing as the when the drifting corner forward that comes out and your man doesn't follow you, like that's the greatest role, and that's better than a sweeper because you're in around the middle.
Yeah,
but that was more in my time. They're extinct now, the roving corner forward.
Yeah, but like to get back to that game, like I think it is, it's a good draw for Fermanagh, and they are, like, I know they lost that game to Armagh in the final, but they are going well. Like, they got promoted, there's a good feel good thing around the place now. They have a big draw at home, there's going to be a big crowd there, they got the Quigleys back. Things are going well for them, like, and this is probably, you're looking, you want somebody like Sean Kavanagh to come out now and say they don't like Brewster Park anymore. But Armagh are probably going down there thinking, Jesus, we need to get out of here with anything.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting that Fermanagh have no injury worries. So Paul McCusker, Sean Quigley had a bang on the finger, I think, and Rory Corrigan is back. They're all okay. And Tomás Corrigan, as we know, has been getting back from his injury as well. He's all right. So they have no injury worries. They're at home in the championship against the team that beat them in the league final. Plenty of motivation there. I'm going to side slightly with Fermanagh in this one. I'm just going to go for a shock. The easy option is to go for Armagh. But I think because they're so evenly matched in a small pitch, I think maybe Fermanagh might cause a shock here. And we know Armagh in Ulster haven't been setting the world alike when it comes around to the championship.
Are Fermanagh sort of not underperforming, but is there more there to come from? Every time I look at their team sheet over the last year or two, you'd be like, Jesus, there's some nice players in there. Like, it seems like they're maybe not just reaching the levels that they could.
Yeah.
Or is that just because I'm seeing 6 or 7 players that I know?
Maybe. Well, they're stuck to that system. Like, I mean, it's hard to improve when you play the same system the whole time. And Rory Gallagher hasn't exactly changed too much about it. So, you know, I think they're at the level that they're at and will continue to be at, which is a top Division 3 team, a mid to low Division 2 team, and a team that could beat the likes of Armagh on any given day in the championship, which I think they might do.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Armagh, though. I think they've been quietly going about their business. McGeaney seems to have a team now that he trusts are in the system. They know what they're doing. They know how to attack. Like, a lot of teams just focus on how to defend and what that's their system, but they've got a system now to get scores, which sounds so simple, but not every county's doing that.
Yeah.
Like, so he's been there long enough. There's a bit of confidence around them. I think they'll go there with their chests out a bit and expect them to win.
Yeah, okay, great stuff. So you're going for Armagh, I'll go for Fermanagh. Who are we going for? We're not going to spend long talking about this now. Tyrone or Monaghan? I think this is a really difficult one. I'm going to go for Tyrone. I think that, you know, in Ulster, they're head and shoulders last year above everybody else. Monaghan are a good team, but I think Tyrone are a better team, and if you want to break it down that simplistic, we're taking the home advantage completely off Tyrone, by the way, but I think Tyrone should be good enough to win this one.
I was going to go with Monaghan today because it's just Tyrone aren't in a good place with Colin Kavanagh having played hardly anything since February, March. Tiernan McCann's been out. It just seems like a bad time for him to get such a big, big.
He's back a while though, Tiernan, right? So he should be in
yeah,
top
back
shape.
Training and stuff. But it's just like, he probably isn't top shape. I'm sure he's fine, but it's just like you sort of want these boys coming in, getting those big results that they had towards the end of the season. I was going to go with Monaghan because obviously then they had that good result against Dublin. This is ages ago now, but they're going
forget about
well.
That.
Yeah.
We see in the league. Do you know what? And it's so hard to fight against this. You see Dublin and Kilkenny last year week in the hurling, and the football is the very same. You're thinking, oh, Dublin have no chance. Very bad league. Kilkenny is just a great league. Bang, Parnell Park. Boom, boom, boom. Hits that you'd never see in league games. And suddenly, the step up from league to championship is unbelievable. I think that's where Monaghan slightly come a cropper, in that they're hitting that league hard because they want to stay up, and they're brilliant in the league. And often people go, geez, Monaghan are coming good. You know, where it doesn't always happen for them in the championship. Now, obviously, it has to be said, they won two Ulsters. So, like, I mean, with that in mind.
But yeah, no, but I was going to go with Tyrone anyway because they seem to just have this Indian sign over Monaghan, and they always
they've only lost once to them in recent times.
Yeah, so I think I'll go with them. And they're going, like, you know, as I said, Lee Brennan scored all their stuff. Like, Tyrone, only Dublin scored more than them. They're going well as well.
Yeah,
they've won their last three games. They're in a good place as it is, so I'm going to go with them.
Okay, right, so in Munster, the quarterfinals, the first one is Limerick versus Clare. Now, Limerick versus Clare, let me tell you, is always a tight game. So they've played each other. Clare have won the last four meetings. They've played each other in the last four years. So, like, I mean, they always seem to draw each other. So Clare have won the previous four clashes. The winning margin, the average winning margin, has never been more of a kick of the ball. 1 point in 2017, last year, 3 in 16, 2 in 15, and 1 in 12. So, like, these two teams, while Clare are performing much better than Limerick in the National League, when it comes to championship, there's never much in them. So, like, I mean, I would go along with saying that that's going to happen again. It's in the Gaelic grounds. I covered these games with News Talk on a few different occasions, and they're actually great games. They're great games down the Gaelic grounds, and there's never much in it. You'd be a fool to back against Clare, to be fair, when you haven't said all that. Their recent form against them while they're close games has that Clare have won. They're operating at a higher level. So for those reasons, I'll go for Clare.
Are they getting dragged down that old classic where they're playing at Limerick's level then, but always good enough just to get away at the
just
end
to get off
them?
It, Limerick kind of played defensively against them and spoil it a little bit.
Yeah, those stats are interesting. I just would have thought Clare as a gimme, but I'm not even thinking twice about it. Clare are going to win this game.
Okay, last one then is Tipperary versus Waterford, and that's in Semple Stadium at 7 o'clock. And to help us look ahead to that, I'm delighted to say the Waterford manager Tom McGlinchey is on the line. Tom, how's it going?
Not too bad, Colin, thanks.
Come here, I want to start off by reading out a quote to you. And it's a quote of yours, and I'm going to read it here now. And it says, let's be realistic here. Tip are probably going to beat us, and beat us well. In fairness to Liam, he probably has the nuisance of having to play us 7 days before he plays Cork, as he said. I suppose the fairest thing to do is if we just give them a walkover. This is textbook mind games coming into the game here, Tom.
For sure, Colm, isn't that what sport is all about? Try and get inside the head of your opponent straight away, you know?
Yeah.
Actually, I know Liam well, Colm, no more than yourself, but, like, I mean, I know Liam 25 years, would you believe, this month, 25 years ago, I met Liam for the first time when I walked through the gates of the Garda College, like, and Liam was an instructor there. So I know Liam a long time. And I suppose what I said was a bit in jest as well. Like, you know, don't you know when you meet a few media lads like that and they're all gathered around you and just, you know, you like to maybe throw an old curveball like that and, you know, see what kind of reaction you get. But it was said in jest. But and I suppose I kind of said it after Liam was making the point about the way, you know, Tipperary have to play a week after they beat us, they'd have to play Cork. So that was just thrown out there.
Yeah, I remember him saying that. But, like, I mean, look, if you're to ask 10 pundits, the 10 of them will say Tipperary should beat Waterford and should beat them well. So, like, I mean, you're being honest, like, in it as well. Like, I'm sure inside the Waterford dressing room you're not saying that. But, like, you're coming off, you know, a Division 4 campaign that wasn't setting the world alight.
Yeah, look, Colin, let's be realistic. I'd love to come out and say, you can give the sound bites. Yeah, we'll give it everything, which we will do. And, you know, we'll do the best we can. And, you know, on our day, we'll put it up to them. But, you know, if you're going on form, of course, Tipperary are going to win it. And I was just being honest about it. But as you say, you know, in the confines of the dressing room and on the training pitch, you know, we're preparing to beat Tipperary. and, you know, put our best foot forward. But, you know, circumstances will say in our own regard that we're missing a good few players from last year and through injury. And, you know, it does make our task harder. But it is never going to go out for the want to try. And we're definitely going to give everything on Saturday night.
The one thing that jumped out at me from your Division 4 campaign was that you only lost to Laois by 4 and you only lost to Carlow by 3. So you were very competitive against the two teams that got promoted and, you know, the two teams that would see themselves probably next year as solid Division 3 teams.
Yeah, I suppose that's been indicative of our campaign even over the last 3 years. It was one of the local reporters below in Waterford, Smalls McCarthy, said to me after that we lost Limerick then by a point. So you could say we lost 3 games by a score, you know, in Division 4 this year. I think last year we lost 4 games by a score or less, and the same the year before. I think there was 10 games in the last 3 years we lost by 2 points or less.
Wow.
So we've been very close, and, you know, but I suppose, you know, close doesn't cut the mustard. Like, you know, you don't get the points for it. But, you know, we have been very competitive. We were competitive in most of the games. I suppose the one game we weren't competitive was the Antrim game, where we got hit with a double yellow card, and, you know, with two, we'll say, counter-attack goals against Antrim. But I think every other game we were very competitive in, and, you know, so, but, you know, results don't lie, and, you know, we finished at close to the bottom of the table, and, you know, that would be disappointing, but at least we were competitive in every game.
Is that a confidence thing then, Tom? Like, I mean, if you're that close, like, and if it's a consistent thing, you know, it's happening over and over again, is Waterford football in a place where they just don't have the belief to be able to push on and beat these teams, and is that the challenge for you?
Yeah, I think that's a valid statement, Colm, because, you know, is it the fear of winning, maybe? And I'm not casting out or aspersion on my players or on the management.
Yeah.
But you know yourself, like if you're still losing games by a point or 2 points, you know, something can set in. I remember my own playing days years ago in my own club, Clyde Rovers in Cork. We lost 5 years in a row in a semi-final or a final to the county champion, to teams that would go on and win it. And in our 6th year, then we actually won it. And I suppose, you know, you kind of get this tag of, God, they're very competitive, but they'll never get over the line. And I suppose that's what we're trying to change. It's harder, but you know, that's something that we do look at after every game, and something that we're trying to achieve is we can just get that break. And as I often said to, you know, to the players and to the backroom, you just love for the Waterford players to just get a break 1 year, like,
yeah,
just like last year in the championship against Cork. You know, we lost by a point. We were up 2 points twice in the second half, but in the end we lost the game by a point. And, you know, you do get gutted after it, but you go back to the well and you try again.
I'm sure that's is what they need, because I'm sure there's footballers in Waterford that might not commit to the county team because of the commitment levels involved and their prospects, you know, of probably being in Division 4 in the muck and trying to get out of that, and then being in a Munster Championship with Cork and Kerry. I know you did well last year against Cork, but, like, I mean, if you could get that spark of beating Cork, suddenly these fellas might come out of the woodwork. And, like, it happened in Laois with Mick O'Dwyer, like, lads who weren't committing for different reasons under Colin Brown, all of a sudden everybody wanted to be there to following year.
Yeah, and look, it's trying to get the consistency of players. I suppose I'm very lucky in my time in Waterford. I've had the core of a 12 or 13 of core fellas that have been there for the last 4 years. But you need that 25 or 26 singing off the same hymn sheet. And again, it was said to me during the week by one of the local reporters, again, like, we played Derry last year in the qualifier, and 11 of the 20 that played against Derry aren't available this year. You know, and that's a huge turnover of players.
Yeah.
You know, every year, you know, to get that consistency, and it does take time. So maybe it does need, maybe, you know, someone like a Mick O'Dwyer figurehead to come in and, you know, rejuvenate Waterford. Or maybe it just needs that spark of getting that one victory, and people underestimate, like, you know, what that one victory can do. And I suppose that's why I'm so adamant there at the end of the league about that game against Leitrim that wasn't played, and fellas might thought we were making a big deal about it, but we had beaten London over in London in the last league game. And if you saw the joy in the dressing room afterwards, and even in the airport before we went home, and all fellas wanted to do was, God, it'd be great now if we could play Leitrim next week and keep this thing going.
Yeah.
But then it just was, everything was shut off. And, you know, and that's what we were looking for. And this was my first year involved. That, again, we'll say the competition that you don't like, the McGrath Cup, you know, all them third competition. But we got a run of 4 games and won 4 games, and you know, beat Cork and then beat UCC, and they won the McGrath Cup for the first time in 31 years. But, you know, it was actually huge for Waterford football. And the following week then we went down and we beat Wicklow in the first round of the league. And, you know, there was a consistency there for 5 weeks where we kept winning week after week. And that's what you're trying to build on. But then when you lose a match or you lose a second match, and as you said, like, you know, maybe in the lower counties, that's when confidence goes and fellas mightn't be, you know, as willing to put in the effort as they might have if you were winning games.
That's the thing. And like, I mean, it's documented that Leitrim have a huge turnover from this time last year as well. I'm just wondering, yeah, when these 11 lads come to you and say they're not committing, I know you have a few injuries, but like, when, what reasons are they giving you?
Like, in fairness, I have to say, like, you know, you can understand, like, there was one guy now, I suppose, and again, I don't like to name names because I don't want to put anyone on the bus. Like, one, yeah, guy, he's a mature student and he wants to go back to Dublin. He went back to do a master's, and I suppose he was trying to do a master's course. He was trying to do maybe a 3-year course in 1 year. And, you know, you can't blame him. Like, in fairness, he tried at the start of the league to come down to a few matches, but it just got too much for him. You've other lads then, like, you know, one lad moved away with a job, and I've just been fierce unlucky with injuries. Like, you know, we had 5 very serious injuries at the end of last year and coming into this year, and that, you know, you just can't do anything about things like that. And I suppose that's, you know, that's why it just gets unfortunate for Waterford. But I have to say, any time then you might ring up fellas to come in. You know, there's 10 new guys on the panel this year, and I have to say, like, you know, they've been a breath of fresh air, and, you know, some of them are going to see championship action on Saturday night, and it's fantastic for them and for their clubs.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, there's a lot of younger people that might be listening to the podcast that might not remember that you managed Tipperary to almost beat Cork in a Munster finalist. And it's terrible that we're getting that old that I think some people listening won't even remember it. But, like, I mean, you started managing Tipperary when you're only 28.
Yeah, I was just a baby. Like, you know, I was brought in. I was lucky enough. I'd say the year before I started managing Tip, I went in as trainer with Colm O'Flaherty, who took over from your friend Colin Brown. And,
right.
I got involved then in 1999. We'll say the coaching, the training part with Tipperary, and then the manager's job came up, and lucky enough to get it. And it was a baptism of fire. Like, my first year was the first year of the qualifiers, and we played Kerry in the championship, and Kerry were reigning All Ireland champions at the time, and they gave us an unmerciful hammering above in Clonmel. Like, you know, when games were played in provincial grounds around the place, and, you know, it was a real baptism of fire. But again, like that, that year I remember Declan Brown had a very serious injury and he wasn't available to us, and there was other players just not available, and the following year they committed, and, you know, we had a good run in the league. And actually, I remember that was the time the leagues were divided. Again, this is for your younger viewers, where the younger listeners were. Do you remember there was the 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B, and we actually had Meath and Monaghan with Laois. My first game that year was against Laois, and it was actually played above in Port Arlington. I think you might have been playing yourself at the time, and, you know, we drew with Laois, and we actually got a good run in the league. We played, I remember Meath beat us by 4 points. And that was the year after they won the All-Ireland, Sean Boylan was over them, and we actually gave Monaghan an awful hammering in their last game below an Art Finnan. So we actually had a good league campaign, and I suppose this is where we're talking about, like, if, you know, that time the leagues were divided into, you know, you had some good teams and some of the perceived weaker teams, but it definitely brought us on hugely. And then obviously we went on and we beat Clare after replay and went on and played Cork, and, you know, like that, unfortunate to lose it in 2002, which was a great time, great times, and really enjoyable.
Yeah, there's not. Are you surprised that when you finished up with Tipperary in 2003, like, I mean, you were only 31, 32, like, I mean, that, yeah, it took so long for you to get another inter-county job?
Yeah, well, I suppose, I had been approached, I suppose, to take on, but I suppose I had spent nearly 4 years at inter-county, and I suppose, like that, you should probably never walk away when you're involved. But I had got married. There was a, you know, with a child. There was, I had, you know, a new house, and I was, you know, I just probably took a break back from it. But I still was involved with, say, in the local club, where I transferred up to Newport, and you know, I was involved with local clubs around, and, you know, got involved in with lucky enough then to get involved with a great club in Limerick called Ballylanders, and, you know, got to two county finals. We won one of them, and, you know, great times with them. And then I got involved with the Limerick Minors and Limerick Under 21s, and, you know, has, you know, really enjoyed my time at that level with the Minors and Under 21s. And then, lucky enough, then, like, you know, got asked to go back to Waterford, and I said, you know what, this might never come up again. So I went back to it, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, exactly. So talk to us a little bit about the style of play with Waterford then. So you pretty much went very defensively last year against Cork and nearly shocked them, and went defensive against Derry and were in it definitely at half time until Derry got the goal. Yeah. So, like, I mean, has that been the case right throughout it, or did you just go back to try that out last year?
I suppose to go against all the purists, yeah, we're going to bring 15 players behind the ball and we're going to shut up shop, like, you know. But no, look, I like to say attacking football as well, and I suppose I'll try and be defensive to myself and our tactics. Of course, we try and bring people back, but it's to try and counter attack is the big thing. And the last thing you don't want to do, like, is, and I suppose we saw it there, some of the teams that played Dublin over the last couple of years, you know, that they would say, well, we want to go out and play our own game and see how we do. But, you know, you get caught for two sucker goals against a team of better quality than you, you know, they're really going to punish you, and, you know, and then your players lose confidence. So obviously we try and defend, that we're not going to try and concede goals, and maybe, you know, work on the counter-attack. But that takes a lot of fitness, it takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of concentration. But, you know, we did it last year against Cork and Derry. I mean, against Derry, we were down 2 points at half time, and we actually probably should have been ahead at half time. And this is, I suppose, where the weaker team loses out. We had the first four chances of the second half against Derry, and kicked four wides, and Derry came down the field, got a point, and it was really a real hammer blow. So I suppose it's when we have the ball in there in a scoring area, is to try and make all them chances count. And that's what we're trying to do. And look, it can be no different Saturday nights. I mean, it's not a secret. Of course, we're going to try and get numbers behind the ball and cut out the side to Quinlivan and Sweeney and Lee McGrath. But it's going to be hard because to create such quality. But I mean, that's the type of football that most teams are trying to play now. And but it's just to get the balance right.
Yeah, no, exactly. Listen, come here, Tom. Best of luck on Saturday night against your old buddy Liam. And tell him I was asking for him.
Yeah, he said you were a great trainer. He couldn't understand why he couldn't get more out of you. Like, you know, I realised. I'll tell him. But you're going to be for the over 40s now soon. We'll have to get the word out there.
I'm not far off that now. Yeah, the Leash Miners of '96 are all going over 40 this year. So we're thinking of getting the band back together.
I'll put in a master's team, Colm. You'd be well able for it.
Listen, Tom. Thanks very much.
No bother, Colm. No bother.
Yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their houses for 10 years.